Well, it's not a new problem. That's what we heard there. And we know that protecting vulnerable children in the Territory remains a significant battle. But after so many years of trying to fix the system, are there any strategies that we know work that we should be employing more broadly? Colleen Gwynn is the Northern Territory's Children's Commissioner, and Olga Havnen is the Chief Executive of Danila Dilba Aboriginal Health Services. Both women have witnessed these problems firsthand and worked for many years with those affected. Olga, Colleen, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Yeah, good morning, Fran.
Olga, you've worked in Indigenous communities for decades. Over that time, there's no clear improvement in a lot of these statistics about the health and safety of Indigenous women and girls in particular. In fact, some of the evidence and the indicators suggest it's on the increase. Why? I mean, it's a very basic question, but I know it's got a difficult and complex answer, Olga. But why are Indigenous children still at risk in some of these communities?
Look, friend, the first thing I would like to say about, particularly in relation to the sexually transmitted infection data, people need to look at that much more carefully. The rates of STI infections in very young children has not changed. The numbers are really small. The second point I would make is that not all STIs are necessarily caused through sexual contact. So you can have non-sexual contact, which would transmit that infection. For example, during birth from mother to child. That might also happen, if you like, in children, say, under four or so on, where there's quite a lot of parental contact with young children, changing of nappies, etc. It's not uncommon for those infections to be transmitted by hand, poor hand hygiene. The next comment I want to make is that the rates of sexually transmitted infections amongst young Aboriginal people is deeply concerning. But the vast majority of that, we believe, is through consensual sexual relations. Now, you know, to conflate STIs and sexual abuse, I think, is completely misleading. And I'm not suggesting you've done that, but certainly other sections of the media have.
It's a fair point, and obviously that's a shocking statistic when you see that Indigenous girls under 16 are 60 times more likely than non-Indigenous girls to contract syphilis. That's a statistic that needs to make us go, what's happening?
Well, can I tell you also, Fran, then, that the Aboriginal adult population in remote communities has had consistently high rates of STI infections that we have found very difficult to manage. The syphilis outbreak that we're dealing with across in northern Australia, we believe, largely came about as a result of the defunding of a program in Queensland for outreach workers. So, yes, these statistics are horrific. You will find, unfortunately, high rates of STIs in any community that is poor, impoverished and disadvantaged and has poor access to services. So I think people need to kind of get a bit of a reality check on what's actually happening here. Yes, governments and the rest of us could do a whole lot more, but we need the resources and the capacity to do that.
Okay, so let's not link that to sexual abuse, but let me quote to you Marcia Langton, clearly a high-profile national Indigenous academic. She says that these STI rates amongst Aboriginal children are a medical emergency caused in part by blatant denialism. Now, I'm not sure what she's talking about in denialism, but do you agree it's a medical emergency?
Look, and I hate using the word medical emergency. It's like, you know, these things as problems have been around for decades. Mm. They're not unknown. When you have people living in really poor living conditions, high rates of overcrowding, all sorts of other sort of problems we've just described, it's not surprising. I mean, we have extremely high rates of TB in our communities. I don't actually hear people screaming about that.
Well,
so I think it's a prurient interest in sexual affairs of Aboriginal people. I wish we were concerned about the high rates of TB, trachoma, any other
infection. I mean, in fact, on this show, we have covered all those issues. But I guess the point is it a period, is it purient interest or is it a concern that women and children are safe? Are you saying to me, and let me ask you this question from your experience, are they
unequivocally,
safe?
Unequivocally, Fran, we need to do more to improve the safety and well-being of not only Aboriginal women and children, but also of men, of the entire community.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different strategies that are required to address that problem.
Well,
you know, if you have a look at the amount of alcohol consumption, the alcohol outlets, Alice Springs has the highest density of takeaway outlets in any town in the country. And we wonder why we've got all these chronic problems. You know, there are systemic issues, there are social policies, there are health responses, there's a whole bunch of things that need to happen.
Okay, let me bring in Colleen Gwynn. Colleen, you're the Northern Territory Children's Commissioner. What do you believe is the level of safety for Indigenous kids in some of these communities? And do you agree with Olga's position there that those statistics on STIs, we shouldn't link them, obviously, directly to sexual abuse levels, of course, but is there an issue in your view?
Okay, so I want to get the first part of that question. I want to refer back to what Chancey said in your intro, that not all Aboriginal communities are unsafe environments. Yep. There are some that
Thanks, Colleen. Good on you. Yes.
are functioning quite well. Some communities, yes, they are unsafe for young people, and there is a number of reasons for that. And alcohol is a real problem for us in the Northern Territory. The second part of the question, STIs, is I certainly think it's an indicator that you have to go and have a further look. I agree with Olga that the STI rates for young children hasn't changed, and it hasn't changed over a number of years. And it does, you will see these rates associated with disadvantage, and that's what we have. We have distinct poverty in parts of the Northern Territory's remote areas, and STIs as a physical indicator of potential child sexual abuse is one indicator, but it doesn't always mean it's from abuse.
Okay. Nevertheless, if we both of you acknowledge there's an alcohol problem in some of these communities, we spoke with Steve Edgington, the mayor of around Tennant Creek the other day. He said housing is a major problem, that is the overcrowding and linked with the alcohol is causing is one of the causes of women and children not being safe in some of these communities. So these are issues that people acknowledge. What is the answer to addressing it? Because governments are keep pouring money in, and I know, Olga, you have a question about how that money is spent, but is it an issue for the leadership within the communities themselves, why the communities aren't dealing with these issues? Olga?
I think it is an issue for the community, and by that I mean, you know, the entire community, Aboriginal people, you know, the entire community of the Northern Territory. But we can't deal with this on our own, and it needs people to be willing to make changes that may impact, perhaps, on the lifestyle that we kind of have here in the Territory, and that is particularly the ready availability of alcohol. So, you know, any time that we have proposed, and I come from Tennant Creek originally, when my brother worked there, he advocated, as did many others, and through Jill Alakari, to have restrictions on takeaway sales, one day a week. That campaign ran for years before we managed to get a trial in place for 6 months. So the resistance by the community and the general public to some of these initiatives also needs to be taken into account. So, you know, these are complex issues. When you ask the question, Fran, what's changing, are things improving? I actually think that there are changes and positive things happening. Communities want to take more control, if you like, be more actively involved in decision-making, be more actively engaged in governments about how services are designed and delivered and so on. But at the end of the day, the Northern Territory has some really unique characteristics, quite different from any other jurisdiction. First of all, its geographic size. We've got a very small population, and we have a highly dispersed Aboriginal population. 80% of the Northern Territory's Aboriginal population lives out bush. Now, those remote communities don't have anywhere near the same level of infrastructure and amenity as you would have in similar-sized towns in, say, Western New South Wales or Victoria. So we have communities with populations of 2,500, 3,000 people, sometimes 5,000, that don't have sealed roads, guttering, curbing. We don't have an ambulance service. You know, we don't have all of the basic infrastructure and services that many Australians just simply take for granted.
Yeah, but can I? We're going to run out of time here, so I better bring Colleen in here. I'm sure that is true, and that is a disgrace, and we've been talking for decades again about appropriate housing and the pressures that puts on communities. Mm. Colleen, as Children's Commissioner, your job is to look at the safety of children. We keep hearing these statistics about the increase in children being taken from their parents, Indigenous kids. You know, there's talk of stolen generations. Do you believe the Indigenous communities are doing well enough, or should be asked to be doing better at, parenting, keeping kids safe within the home?
Look, I think everyone
I'm not talking sexually here. I'm talking about neglect and care.
Yeah, the problem we have in the Northern Territory is we've got this, it's a blame game. Everyone says, what is government doing? What are the Aboriginal people doing? What is the Department of Territory Families? biggest issue we have is we are all trying to do this in isolation. And the problem we have in the Northern Territory is there's no joined up approach. There's never been a joined up approach. And unless we understand that we have to come together, because if you are police or you are non-government sector or you are education department, you actually all have the same outcome in mind. And that is the protection of our most vulnerable children. And at the moment, we're doing it in isolation and we actually need to sort that out. It's disjointed, and it's not about the services in most parts. And at the moment, I'm investigating the circumstances around what happened to that two-year-old in Tennant Creek. And I can't talk about what the findings will be, but I can tell you one area that will come out fairly strongly will be the fact that it's not about the availability of services. They are there. It's about the coordination and the sharing of information and the joined-up approach to how we will deal with these really big issues.
Okay, well, they are really big issues, complex as the Royal Commission found them. I think that's an understatement. So clearly we need to keep thinking and talking and working, which is what you both are doing. Olga Havnen, Colleen Gwynne, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Thanks, Fran.
Olga Havnen is the Chief Executive of the Danila Dilba Aboriginal Health Services, and Colleen Gwynne, the Northern Territory Children's Commissioner.